This is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves case number 163 for property ID 148366000. It is for Beauty Limited Partnership, Beauty spelled B-U-T-Y, and it is 50% interest. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. Greg Peterson is present as the representative for the assessor's office over video chat, and Wayne Tannenbaum is present over the phone as the representative for the appellant. They've both already been sworn in.
Since you've all been sworn in, let's go ahead and hear about this one, Wayne.
Our presentation and rebuttal arguments are the same for this case as they were for the previous cases.
Let me just confirm that you're seeking a value of 770,
368. Let me just verify that. Okay. 770-368, is that on our packet?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Then, yes, that's correct. I see it.
Okay. All right. Greg, any other rebuttal on that one?
It's the same argument, you know, and the same. I feel like I need to speak to each one, but I would be saying the same.
Okay.
It's a situation where we're done.
I raised the question on it, and when we get to one of them, this one you raised, the rate is 775, and I forgot which one that one was.
So the second one we heard did have a rate of 775. What I recall. This one, I need to pull
this. This is 7.5. So.
Yeah.
It's just the same. Okay, close that hearing.
This is the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 184 for property ID 176-630-005. The property is owned by Columbia Tech Center, LLC. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have Greg Peterson as a spectator from the assessor's office, but Lonnie Dawkins is present over video chat as the representative from their office. We have Wayne Tannenbaum on the phone for the representative for the appellant. So at this time, anybody who's planning on speaking, go ahead and raise your right hands and we'll get you sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes. I do.
Thank you. Just to remind you, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2021. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days, after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions, I'm going to turn it over to you, Mr. Tannenbaum, to tell us about this property.
All right. Typical PetSmart property located at 130 Southeast 192nd Avenue in East Vancouver. And if you'll notice on our page number 2, you'll notice first the county's value of $2,484,700, $131.69 a square foot. We have both the sales, market sales approach coming in at $113.94 a square foot and a cost to purchase $106.26 a square foot. Even though we put our value requested at the cost, I believe that you have to have, if you have enough market or income, that would support a value on a PetSmart type property. So I'm only going to briefly talk about our cost approach, and I would like to revise our requested value to that $2,149,820. Do we have a?
Where is that?
Yeah.
Located.
That's our sales comparison approach value. page 2. Okay.
Oh, got it.
On page number 3, information about the subject, the location. It was built in 2006. It's 18,868 square feet on 2.1 acres of land. The breakdown of the land improvements in total, that's the county's breakdown and on page 3. But the thing we're really concerned about in this type of property is the total value of $131.69 a square foot. The following pages is where the subject is located. There's an aerial of the subject. And our main evidence is on page number 6. These are retail sales, and as you will notice, the subject is on for $131.69 a square foot, built 2006. These sales comparables, there's 3 of them that were built between 2006 and 2008, so there's very similar year built. There's a couple built in 1999 and 1994, which is also similar to the subject. They're also similar in square feet. There's a few that are a little smaller, a little larger, but a good range of both smaller and larger comparables, all retail, that all support, as you can see here, where it says dollar per square foot on our page 6, the $/SF. These sold for, and I'll just give you the rounded numbers, $108, $119, $116, $116, and $110 per square foot. Keeping in mind, before any minor adjustments, we made minor adjustments, but there was not huge adjustments needed. These all support a lower value per square foot. On page 7 and beyond, especially page 8 and beyond.
Wait a minute. Where are those numbers?
I'm sorry?
Tell me where those numbers are. You're on page 6, you just read off a bunch of numbers, and they're not the same as I have.
You rounded them.
I just rounded the values. The per square foot, the $/SF in our chart, the dollar per square foot.
Adjusted.
Well, the adjusted dollar per square foot would be rounded $108, $122, $112, $112, and $117. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and they all support lower. Now, starting on our page number 8 is our retail sales. And they go, every retail sale that we provided is a full CoStar report that are similar to the subject in use, size, and age within a few, number of years or square feet, but they're similar. And I'll let the board take a look at those sales and decide how similar they are, but they definitely support a lower value. On page 22, after all the sales, we do have a cost approach. But that's only a secondary weight, if that, because, again, these are not bought and sold on these type of properties on the cost approach. So we can go into that in detail if needed or argue back and forth about that. But our main weight is really our market sales. And that completes our presentation.
Did you do a land analysis also?
Which one, I'm sorry?
A land analysis.
Yeah, under the cost approach, we do have land and improvements, meaning we have a Marshall and Swift value lower on improvements, and then we do a separate land sales. But again, I can go over those if needed. It's very difficult to value these on the cost approach. But yes, we do have land sales on page 27.
Okay, got it. Okay. Lonnie, you want to talk about the county information?
You bet. Since Wayne went over the location of the property, I'll just briefly go over the information I have. On page 3 is summary of pertinent data for PetSmart. And I don't know if you are aware of the location, but the location is on the corner of Southeast First and 192nd Avenue. So it's anchored by Home Depot and Walmart, and then kitty corner from that is Costco. So what we're dealing with is a property that is in an excellent location and a great demographic, great traffic count from 192nd Avenue. It's one of the fastest growing areas in our whole county. And so, and it's on the corner. So it shares access with these anchors, and it is far superior than the sales approach that the taxpayers provided. And I'll just go over briefly some of the characteristics. It's 2.1 acres, which is a fairly large pad site for a Home Depot, Walmart. Usually they're in the acre range for fast foods and banks. So it's fairly large. And so it's MX zone, which is very flexible for the city of Vancouver. And the value, as Wayne stated, is $2,484,700. Or $131 a square foot. On page 5 is an aerial photograph that gives you kind of a visual representation of the good location being next to those large retailers. Page 6 is just the front of the store. So on page 8 is the land sales that I provided, and it's kind of difficult to have a large pad site like this, a 2-acre site. As I said, it's a little bit larger than typical pad sites for these anchor stores. So one of the sale number one is a 0.6-acre site. And it was in Battleground, Washington, off of SR 503. It's a new retail development near, there's a Walmart near there and some apartments near there. And, you know, some of the national franchise fast food restaurants, things like that. And that was sold in December of 2018 for $1,093,000. And that was almost $42 a square foot. And comp number two, and keep in mind that, you know, there's a lot of land sales. I used my judgment to select the most comparable to a pad site that has these heavy retailers that are in demand. So I could have chose land sales that were not part of a anchor, but it's a different market. These pad sites are in high demand just because of the traffic counts and the flow of people. Comp number two is on 134th Avenue in Vancouver. It's Salmon Creek. It's just west of the Umpqua Bank near Washington State University. And it's sold for $42 a foot, and it's a half-acre site. There again, it's smaller sites. Sale number three is on Southeast 18th Street. And it was, and this is right off 164th Avenue. So 164th Avenue runs parallel to 194th and is comparable in traffic counts and demographics. It's so this is a very good sale. It's a 1.14 acres. It's $29.38 a foot. Keep in mind that we have $11.86 a square foot on the land on the subject property. Sale number four is on 192nd Avenue, and I included this. Granted, it was 9 years ago, but the reason I included it is it's in the same complex. And even though it's old, it's very telling of the demand for this product. It's a 0.84 acres, which would be more of the traditional pad sites. And it's over $26.65 a foot. And it's 9 years ago. And I didn't choose this because it was a high dollar amount. I chose it because it's the most comparable. And the thing is, since 2012, the commercial market in most of the country, but in East Vancouver has been dramatically gone up. And so if this sold for $26.65 a foot in 2012, the $11.86 square foot on the corner site where PetSmart is super, defendable. It's so on page 9 is the cost approach and a summary of that. On page 10 is the income approach that was relied on for the valuation. And as Wayne said, it's 18,868 square feet. And rent of $1.05 a square foot was selected as the rent for this property. Now, keep in mind that PetSmart is leasing the land, and I spoke to the owner of the land, and he was surprised that this was being appealed, to be frank, and he wouldn't give me the details of the land lease when they built the building. Just to say he was a little surprised that it was being appraised. Being appealed. And especially with this COVID, you know, what we've dealt with as a country, it's just anecdotal that the pet industry has actually done better than, between that and fast food restaurants, they've done some of the better, had success during this whole COVID outbreak. That's just neither here nor there, but I thought it was interesting. $1.05 a square foot on the land, a 10% vacancy and a 10% operating expense at a triple net rent and cap rate of 7.75. And that capitalized out at the $2.48 million on the property. So I've included some sales of properties that are comparable in the Portland-Vancouver metro area. And they're provided as just supportive documentation of what these properties trade for. And they're almost all at a higher dollar per square foot than the subject property. On page 12, a Vancouver property that is a pad site to the Costco on Andreessen, it's sold. It's a chiropractor office and a couple other, it's two different tenants. And it's sold in May of 2020. It's on page 12. Does everybody find it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And it sold in May of 2020 for $3.1 million or $266 a square foot. And Wayne mentioned that the comparables that they use were similar uses. And it's just, we could go one by one. They're just not. The one on Fourth Plain was built in 1974 and it's on a small site and it's far inferior in location. And we could go through each one if you'd like. The rest of my appraisal report is just sales of similar properties just to confirm that our income approach is a reasonable estimate of value. And I'll answer any questions you have.
I don't have any questions. I have enough information, I think.
I'm okay with this. What I've been reading here and what you just explained.
Yes, I have some rebuttal.
Okay.
When it's my turn.
Go ahead.
Sorry?
Go ahead, Wayne.
Okay, well, I'm very glad they brought up COVID because they seem to think that matters, and they might be right. That maybe pet stores, fast food restaurants did better. So now they have to be honest and tell us what they think about daycares, how that did in COVID. But I guess that's irrelevant. So I'll wait for another case on that. My point being on this particular case, they're talking so much about using a land comp from 9 years ago, whether it's in the same center or not. That's kind of crazy. But the way they're talking about this land in the corner and this and that, I think they're right. It's land value. How about that? How about it's such good land, they're making it seem like, that we should knock down the PetSmart and just call it land value. If we're going to look at this on the cost approach, then we got to just call it land value. That's all it is. But if not, then we need market and income. And I'm not sure exactly what they're talking about. They're going to go over every one of our sales and talk about whatever they're going to talk about. You have all of our sales. You see the location, you see the full CoStar printout, you see the retail properties. You see how similar they are in your build, similar in square feet, et cetera. They're very similar as to subject property in many regards. And I'm going to leave it up to the board to decide that, other than just the appraiser saying that somehow they're not, which is just hard for me to believe. But I'll leave it up to the board because the board has, I'm sure, both the sales we provided, the county sales, the locations, and the full CoStar printouts on both sides. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe you don't have the full CoStar printout of the county sales. So we provided more extensive information on our sales, so that makes them probably more valid. But that's all we have.
Okay, this building, does it only have PetSmart in it? I mean, there's nobody else in the building?
Yes, it's a single user, correct. I tried to choose comps that were single users as well. If you have any questions about the taxpayers' comparables, I can certainly address them.
Is this a franchise operation, or do they own? Is a PetSmart own operation?
Oh, if you're asking me,
anybody?
You know, PetSmart leases. PetSmart always, from our number of many of these PetSmarts throughout the nation, from what we know, they're essentially all of them, maybe except for a few, but this one's not. I don't believe. I think they're most of them are leased. But then again, the leases are usually well before the value date, so it'd be hard to know what the market lease is if you use their rental rate.
No, I'm saying, are they a franchise operation, or are they owned by PetSmart? I mean, the operation itself.
Oh, that I don't know offhand.
If I was a betting man, I bet they're corporately owned. If I was a betting man. And there, this land is leased. Even though it's old, I would be very interested to know what the land lease was.
I'd be interested to get your CoStar printouts of all your sales, but we don't get that.
Okay, I have no further questions.
I don't have any more. Find what I have here.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lonnie. So I guess you can go back to work now.
Yeah.
Dan, are you ready for me to close that one?
Close the hearing.
This is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 162 for property ID 144495005. The property is owned by Oliver M. Hidden and Donna C. Hidden. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one present for the assessor's office, but we do have Wayne Tannenbaum as the representative for the appellant present over the phone. And then I guess for this one, we'll go ahead and have you raise your right hand and get sworn in for this one because it's separate.
Okay.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Thank you. And I've already given you information about responsibilities, so go ahead and tell us about this one.
All right. This is an interesting property, United Rentals. We have a number of these, and they're a little confusing properties because, I mean, if you look at them, they're essentially warehouse, even if you look at the covers. They might be retail as far as renting out equipment, but that would be just a makeshift type of kind of counter and office, which might give a slightly higher value to that small section that's somewhat retail. It's just very difficult to value these. When you have an aspect of selling or renting equipment, and then the rest, a lot of it is warehouse. So difficult to value this, but on our page number 2, I wish we did have more information, but the bottom line is we have information and the appraiser does not. But on page two, the value is by the county, $514,353.57. We have a cost approach. Given the type of subject property it is, that equates to $247,818 or $25.81 a square foot. The property was built in 1983. Again, this is obviously not a new property, so there's going to be quite a bit of depreciation on it. It's 9,600 square foot building on 0.9 acres of land, so almost an acre of land, but not quite. The land value is given at by the county at $5 a square foot, and the improvement value at $33.16, a total of $53.57 a square foot. The following pages where the subject is located, there's an aerial, and then you get to our main analysis on page 8, which is essentially this is a warehouse property, and if you look at the front page, nobody needs to be an expert to know that that sure looks like a building that hasn't been remodeled over the years. Now, I can't guarantee it hasn't been remodeled at all, but essentially it's built in 1983 and essentially has the bones of 1983 building. And we use the S average because if you look at the building, that's essentially just a very square, you know, low ceiling height type warehouse. Obviously, there's warehouses that have much better ceiling height, much better construction, et cetera, because they don't need to make the building to rent out their equipment. Very simply, most of their equipment is obviously outside. So the building does not have to be a superior nature or be leased out because they own the building and they're doing leasing out the equipment. So we have $40.50 per square foot on the far right from Marshall & Swift, 78% depreciation from Marshall & Swift. And the bottom line is with a regional multiplier of 1.12, which doesn't help us, that's 12% more, and extra features of $40,000, we have a total replacement cost and less depreciation of $135,800. Just so you're aware, to compare that, the county's on for $318,300. So percentage-wise, that's less than half, we believe, the improvement value. Whether the board believes that on the cost approach, one improvement for land should be lowered or neither or one or the other, completely up to you. It just needs to come together. And we do also have lower land comps. And whether you feel like the land is justified at $5 or lower, we'll leave that with you. I'll go over the land comps briefly. By the way, the Marshall and Swift pages start on page 7 for the improvements and go all the way to page 10. But then on page 11, we're talking about the land. We have 5 land comps. But I can tell you ahead of time that on page 12, or 13 actually, sorry, we might have 7 land sales, but looks like there's only one that's in the same city. I don't know if having one land sale in the same city is enough to overcome the land value of the county. I would much prefer to rely more on our lower improvement value. But overall, on a cost basis, it supports a lower value, and that concludes our presentation.
Okay.
I don't have anything on the income approach, right?
I don't have any.
Okay. All right.
I have no questions. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Great. Thank you. Close that hearing.
This is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves case number 159 for property ID 114331012. The property is owned by KCPRE LLC. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have Greg Peterson present as the representative for the assessor's office, and he's over video chat. And we have Wayne Tannenbaum present over the phone as the representative for the appellant. So if you could both, well, I guess we've already sworn you both in, but I will hand it over to Dan to do the read-in.
Okay, we've already sworn you in and given you a discussion of the responsibility. So this, and you've already given us a background on the daycare center, so I will let you go ahead, Wayne, and tell us about this one.
Sure, and our evidence is essentially the same, and if we can just rely, I mean, we've heard all the arguments. I'd have to see if the appraiser's evidence is the same, but the only slight differences on this one, because my arguments from last case are going to be the same arguments on this one. Maybe the only one of the only differences on this one is I don't even think that's a 5% COVID reduction. Maybe it's like a 2% COVID reduction they gave on this one, but anyway, that's the whole bottom line, is that after the article, after looking at all the evidence, we just hope the board decides, and at their discretion, which, trust me, there's many times we are surprised by the board's decision, both good and bad, so we can only leave it up to the board. But the same arguments are the same for this one.
So that you're asking for $511,000 on this one, is that correct?
That seems a little low to me. I mean, yeah, just, and I hate to say it, but I do say it in cases, obviously, most times boards do not go to our exact number anyway, so I'll just leave it up to you. But yes, that's where
I mean, that's what you're requesting is 511.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right, do you have anything else to add, Greg?
Yeah, a point of clarification. Wayne, he pointed out, and he is correct, that there is not a 5% difference in this value compared to other ones, and the reason is it was in current reval the year this was appraised. It was appraised. That new base value was established, and then from there adjusted downward. So the net difference is not a 5% value from the previous year to this year. The 5% difference was the new appraised, reappraised value, less 5%. So I'm glad you caught that, Wayne, so I could explain that. I don't have the only thing I'd like to speak to regarding the appellant's evidence is, again, the land sales. The improved sales are the same. It's those two sales that I'm going to argue do not indicate market value, and that's up to debate. But I would like to speak to the appellant's land sales, which he is on page 21 of the appellant's evidence. I would argue these are not comparable land sales, and I'll go through each one at a time. Land sale number one is located in Battleground. It's just not similar to something that's located off of Mill Plain and Chocolate in Vancouver. It's just not the same world. Land sale number two is also in Battleground. Same argument as number one.
Can we withdraw our cost approach? Would that make it easier?
You could.
But I don't really believe.
I'm sorry.
I don't believe in it. I just believe in what we talked about before, other evidence. I don't believe it's bought and sold on cost. So I'd rather just withdraw in this case our cost approach and make it easier.
So you're going to, let me just be clear. I'm going to make sure I understand. So you're going to withdraw the cost approach and rely upon
our rebuttal and our sales.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I understand. Yeah. So then I mean, if the board wants me to, I can speak more to those land sales, or if we're going to withdraw the cost approach, I won't waste our time.
Well, we still have to do an allocation of land and building.
Okay. So I'll continue then. On page 21, land sale number three of the appellants, that's a 5-acre site that's industrially zoned, and it's a daycare wouldn't be allowed. It's the wrong zoning. It's not a comparable sale. Sale number four is not in a comparable area either. It's out in Ridgefield near the fairgrounds, where there's just a lot of speculation occurring regarding that rework of that intersection. It's just, there's too many moving pieces out there in Ridgefield that would make it comparable to a piece of ground that's off of Mill Plain and Chocolate in Vancouver. And then the last sale, again, is a property in Old Town Washougal. It just is not comparable. So I would rely upon the land sales that I provided in my appraisal report, which is on page 10. They are all of similar zone, similar size, that would indicate our land value. Our appraisal report is very, very similar on each one because we are dealing with limited data. I can go through it if you want, but I don't want to waste your time. If you've already reviewed it, if you have questions regarding it, please feel free to ask. But the appraisals are very similar.
So your rent rate is a little lower on this one than the other one?
Because it's not as it's not that previous property is just in a prime location. This one it's in a good location, but it is inferior, and a lower rent was chosen by the appraiser. Yes.
You're using the 7.5. Mm-hmm. And then taking that value and reducing it.
It was a 5% adjustment off of the new appraised value, which does not render a net difference of 5% from the 2020 value because it was a reappraisal. Yeah.
Okay, any questions? Any other rebuttal, Wayne?
Actually, I did have about 30 seconds worth of something. So it's interesting. On the prior case, I think he mentioned something about that being a nice building, and they don't have to worry about the parents don't have to worry about the building falling down. No, they just have to worry about their kids getting COVID. So my point is this. If you're a buyer, ask yourself this as a board. Number one, if you own a daycare facility, you probably expect definitely more than a 5% lower value as a 1/1/21. But more importantly, as a buyer, what the county is saying is that if you were to pay a 7 cap rate before COVID, now you'll pay just a 7.25 right in the middle of 1/1/21 COVID for a daycare center. That's what's hard for us to believe, and that's why we feel if you put yourself in the buyer's perspective as a 1/1/21, the cap rate should be higher. That's all.
Okay. Any other questions? The question is, if it should be, then what should it be?
Dan, it's a situation where we just struggled with what do we do with this stuff? It's so difficult, and Wayne and I agree. This is a situation where there are people much smarter than all of us trying to figure this out, and they're still spinning their heads. We've done our best to acknowledge it, and we're providing the best evidence we have. And keep in mind that this is a mass appraisal. We are valuing a property at a point of time. But at the same time, cap rates are over the life of the property. It's the risk associated to that property over its lifetime. And I would like to think that COVID will not last the lifetime of these properties. And I would hope to think that we're turning the corner on them. In 2021, obviously, things were looking grim. But we can't value a property at a 7.5 cap rate in year one and then drop it or then raise it up to a 12 in year two because of COVID and then drop it back down. It's over the life of the property. We're trying to acknowledge the value. It doesn't mean that what we've done is right, but we've done our best to acknowledge it.
Can I say is a discount cash flow analysis that can be done that neither of us did that could take into account a life more of a property, but we don't know. You're right.
Well, I mean, in theory, based on the on the time frame, it should be based on what conditions exist at the current time and some prognosis of the future, but the future is so unknown that I have no idea whether it's 7% or 7.5% or 10% or 4%. Who knows?
And the argument can't be made that if there's zero income, the property is worth nothing. Obviously, that's a ridiculous argument as well.
I mean, the worst case scenario is the restaurant situation. Every time they go into a lockdown, the value of that restaurant goes down more and more because it's uncertain. And now you hear this last round of shutdowns. There's so many of us that we can't do another one, and they just go out of business entirely. They're gone. So the value is pretty much zilch.
If we see this variant continue and this problem exists for 2 or 3 more years, we're going to start calculating what's going to be how can that improvement be improved to a different use, and value it that way.
Yeah.
That may be what happens. But in the meanwhile, we're in the middle of this, and we're using the best information we have.
They're all going to be turned into healthcare facilities.
And
you had some information. You had some information to come up with 5%.
Yeah. So Lisa, that you're going to ask how was that calculated?
I mean, yeah. You said best information we had. The best information we had only gave a 5% discount.
So what we did is we sent out surveys to all property owners and received I want to say 12% return on these surveys, and we categorized them into property type, and then we did our best to categorize them into which ones declared the greatest effect versus the least effect or no effect. And then we put those property types into categories and did our best to try to apply an adjustment that would acknowledge what those surveys were telling us. The problem is, as you could imagine, it's all over the board. Even within the same property type, some retail strips were reporting zero change, and some retail strips were reporting a 30 or 40% collection loss, and we have tenants abandoning. So how do you treat that same property type when you're getting different answers? So we did our best to categorize those, and the largest adjustment we had was, I believe, hotels, motels, and theaters received the highest downward adjustment, and the ones that did receive an adjustment downward received a 5%, an acknowledgement, the best acknowledgement we could have, and it's...
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Close it, Jeremy.
I'm good.
Yep. Okay, one moment. Okay, this is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 164 for property ID 15490640. The property is owned by KCPRE LLC. That is identical to a property earlier. This is the second property of that name reviewed today. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. Greg Peterson is present over video chat for the assessor's office, and Wayne Tannenbaum is present over the phone for the appellant. So at this time, they've both been sworn in, so I'll hand it to Dan.
Since you've all been sworn in and everything, go ahead, Wayne, and tell us anything additional about this property.
Our argument and rebuttal are the same as they were for other cases, and our requested value is $1,143,308.
Okay. Greg, anything else?
No, other than I would have a hard time requesting a value based upon the evidence. The value they're requesting based upon the evidence they submitted would be, in my estimation, a gross error. Because as discussed, the two sales that that's predicated upon, they're not market transactions. If the board would choose to adjust the value based upon an adjustment cap rate, I'm not going to argue that. That's within your right and within your judgment. But to base a value on predicated upon two sales that clearly do not indicate market value, that's one where there would be very difficult to swallow. And even Wayne's even discussed that issue of, is it an 8? Is it an 8.5? Is it a 9 cap? I mean, none of us could argue we're wrong or right on that, and the board has the wherewithal. But to predicate the value on the evidence would be an error. And that's really the last comment I would speak to regarding this and the next hearing.
That's fair enough. We say that's fair enough.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
I have no questions.
No questions.
Okay, close that hearing.
This is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 158 for property ID 108-858-954. The property is owned by Mahan Ralph D. and Mahan Georgia Trustee. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. Greg Peterson is our representative present over video chat for the assessor's office. And we have Wayne Tannenbaum present for the appellant as their representative, and he's present over the phone. So if we could, we'll have you both raise your right hand, get sworn in, and we'll get going.
I'm going to swear you guys in for all the cases that we're going to be hearing on the daycare centers. So I'll swear you in with that statement in the beginning, and then I'll just repeat that statement each time we go to another case that you've already been sworn in. Is that okay with you, too?
That works.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing? These hearings will be the truth under penalty for perjury.
I do.
Yeah, I do.
Thank you. So let's. I'll also give you the discussion of our independence. So we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony, make a decision on the value of these properties as of January 1st, 2021. Keep in mind the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you get a written response from this board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. And this swearing in and discussion applies to all the cases we're going to hear for the daycare centers today. So go ahead and Mr. Tannenbaum, and tell us about this first one, which is case number 158.
Sure. Could I get the parcel number on that, please?
It's 108-858-954.
Okay. Just give me 1 second. Okay, I'm back. As far as the KinderCare is here, the first one might take the longest, but if we have some of the same information, at least on our end, we'll be a lot quicker for all of these hearings, except maybe for the first one. But one of the reasons we went forward is exactly, and I'm sure the appraiser will bring it up, because the other one brought it up on the prior case, because they thought it was important, and of course it is, that there is COVID as of 1/1/21. It's important to note that as of 1/1/21, nobody had any idea what was going to happen. So why would you buy a daycare facility, for example? They obviously had to shut down. There was obviously still variants. Nobody had any idea exactly what was going to happen. Why would you even buy a daycare center? I mean, that's extremely risky. And if you're going to buy a daycare center, what's your cap rate then based on risk? Would it be an 8, a 9, a 10, a 20? I mean, it's impossible to know, but it wouldn't be the same as it was the prior year. And that has to do with a lot of these cases. I'm sure the appraiser will touch on that just as the prior one did in their benefit, but this one would not be in their benefit because daycare facilities suffered. And we actually have an article in here from December of 2020, a month before the value date, explaining how difficult it is for daycare centers dealing with COVID. Now, this particular property on page number 2 might have gone down in value, but it was very slight and wouldn't be enough to cover the risk and the on the income approach or a cap rate, et cetera, based on the COVID situation. So the 2022 value is on our page 2 for the county is $2,435,040 or $209.92. We have sales of some daycares that support a value of, per square foot of $111.15. We do have a cost approach, which, again, is secondary. These aren't really bought and sold on the cost approach unless maybe they're brand new, but this particular one was built in 1999, so we're mainly relying on our sales approach on this particular one, and we did give that value on page number 2 as our requested value based on sales. Page 3 gives you some information about the subject, 11,600 square feet, built in 1999. It's the land size is
Yes, less than an acre, 30,056 square feet of land. The breakdown of land improvements is given here, but the overall value is where we're looking at, which is $209.92 a square foot. Again, there's some information here about daycare centers being one of the hardest hit during COVID, but more importantly, if you turn to the following page, starting on page 4, this is an article we've given in our packet, I believe, for each one of the daycare centers. This is an article from 2020, and obviously I'm not going to read the entire article, but it's there for the board and for the appraisers to look at, and absolutely after reading it, you'll understand what a risk it would be. As it says here, sacrificing to stay open, child care providers face a bleak future without relief. So we had no idea what kind of relief was coming as a 1121 or variance or what have you. So what do we do on a market value basis? We obviously give a reduction at the very least based on a much higher cap rate as a risk. So I'm going to leave you with that article. And the following pages is where the subject is located until we come to our page 8. Now, this is what makes it difficult to value because of the fact that we have provided, yes, we've only provided 2 daycare sales. Now, these daycare sales support quite a bit lower per square foot. And one of them, let me just see here, they're both given on our page number 8. They sold for, I guess, after adjustments, about $112 rounded a square foot and $110, and one for over $209 a square foot. On our page 9, you can see where the subject is located in our comparables. And what's interesting about this one is, you look where the star is on our page 9 versus comp 2. Comp 2 is not that far away, and if you look at our comp 2, which is on page 13 of our information, that is a daycare facility built in 1989. It looks like a nice one. Sold 2/15 of 2019. Well, they sure sold it at the right time, even before the pandemic, and it still sold for $106 a square foot. That's Le Petit Daycare. Now, the issue is, yes, usually 2 sales, and by the way, before I go into that, usually 2 sales is not necessarily enough to always get a lower value, but there's 2 main factors we spoke about. If the county believed this property was worth, I think it was about $140,000, I'm giving you rounded numbers, more the year before. That's it. Meaning that's a very minor amount considering what's happening with COVID. So we just want the board to take into account a number of things. What was the value last year? Did the county take COVID into account? Nowhere near as much as we consider it. We've given the article explaining the situation with COVID. We have given a couple of sales. And we've also given a cost approach, which for us is secondary because, again, these are not really bought and sold on cost, these daycare centers. So in closing, essentially, we are looking at a reduction based on the COVID situation and based on the sales we have. And that's all we have.
And there was no other sales available to compare this to?
I don't think we found enough relevant ones. I'd be interested to see what the appraiser has.
Now, your sales number 1, unfortunately my memory is good on this one. Isn't that the same one you used last year, but it looks like it sold in 21 again. So had it sold previously to that date that had to add it in there?
That's possible. Yeah, it looks like it sold. Well, no, sale history on CoStar page 10. Looks like there was a non-arm's length in 2008, but then 6/21. And don't get me wrong, that is after the value date, but it's hard to find similar sales. So I will give you that. It is after the value date.
Well, I understand, but it's right in the middle of the COVID.
Right. That's why we included it, yeah.
Okay. Any questions from Lisa or Dick?
No, I don't have any. I followed him along as he took us through this.
All right, go ahead, Greg. And
sure. I'll agree with Wayne that there's many similarities in all these seven cases, and many of the same sales are used and land sales, so this shouldn't take to be as daunting as thought. I'll agree with Wayne. It's a difficult task to value a property that's been affected by COVID. The assessor's office made every attempt to contact business owners in the form of a COVID survey prior to our evaluations in 2021. We sent out surveys to all property owners asking for details on how COVID had affected their business. None of the appellants that we are hearing today replied to that survey. There's no information from them regarding how it affected them. Whether, you know, and as to why they didn't reply, I can't answer to that. But the assessor's office made an attempt based upon property types to adjust properties due to the effects of COVID. It can be argued as to how much that should be, and that may ultimately be what the board decides here. For daycares, the assessor's office, based upon the tallied results of our survey, we did apply a 5% negative adjustment to daycares. And again, whether or not that's enough, that it's, as an appraiser, we have to be able to justify our adjustments with numbers and calculations, and this is a difficult one to do so. That being said, because the appellant is relying upon these two daycare sales, I want to speak to these two daycare sales specifically. Neither of these sales are arm's length market transactions. Neither of them. Sale number one, the property located on 124th Avenue, was a sale. It sold for $305,000 due to a death in the family, and there was a liquidation of assets. And then it was immediately resold on the same day. So obviously there was an arrangement of sale to an operation that operates a non-for-profit for providing daycare for kids. It just happens to be right down the street from Image Elementary.
Greg, is that the $485,000?
It sold for $305,000 and then $485,000.
Okay.
Neither sales, what was the property exposed to the market? It wasn't listed. It wasn't marketed in any way, shape, or form. So it's just not an arm's length transaction. That's the bottom line. The second sale on Park Crest, sold in 2019, that Wayne spoke to, that property is also not an arm's length transaction. It sold to the ESD 112, which is the Educational Service District that provide they provide services to in support of school districts. And the reason that's not an arm's length transaction is not because it was sold to the ESD. It's because the ESD was the tenant since 2017 in that property. And it sold in 2019. So it was not exposed to the market. It was sold to an existing tenant. None of us can understand the details of that sale, of what was paid previously. There were several hundred thousand dollars of rehab to that building from the time the ESD occupied the building to the time it was sold. So it's a very muddy sale, and it is not arm's length. So I would not rely upon those two sales as an indication of market value.
Now, who owned it prior to that? I mean,
private entity not related to the ESD. And I will say that property had been for sale and for about 4 years before the ESD occupied it. So there had been multiple attempts to sell it, and it didn't sell. And then the ESD came along. Whatever lease arrangements were made, they occupied the building starting in 2017. And I have information from permitting confirming that. And then the property sold to the ESD 2 years later. So they're just not arm's length transactions. They're sales, yes. And Wayne provided CoStar printouts, yes. But that doesn't mean they're relevant or valid.
Okay, objection.
I'm concerned that I'm not sure I understand unless there was an element in the lease agreement that was a lease buy situation. I guess it would be still...
That's why we object. The use of non-arm's length transaction is being used incorrectly. That's our objection, exactly.
The problem is the property was not exposed to the market.
Well, you said it was for sale for several years before.
For several years prior, and then in 2017, the ESD occupied the building and it was taken off the market. And from 2017 to the sale of the property in 2019, the ESD had occupied the building. It was not for sale in that time period. And then when it sold, it was not exposed to the market in that time period. That's confusing. I apologize for the confusion.
I understand your concern. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so those two daycare centers are not considered market transactions. And any appraiser would look at that and say, and would hesitate using those sales. The second portion that I'd like to review and discuss are the land sales utilized by the appellant to establish their land value. And I'll go through each sale one by one. The first sale, and that's on the appellant's evidence page. I'm scrolling to it. I apologize. Page 21. So the first land sale is a good sale. It's commercially zoned. It's in a competing area by the Van Mall. No beef with that sale. The second sale, 3.2 acres did not sell, 0.57 acres sold, and that is now at Dutch Brothers. So that sale indicates a substantially higher dollar per square foot, and it's not a comparable. It's a 0.57 acre pad site for a coffee shop, not the 3.2 acres. And that included the construction of the Dutch Brothers in that sale for $2,075,000. So it's just not a land sale. Sale number three, the 195261, that's a sale in Battleground, not comparable to a property that's on McGilvery and 164th in Vancouver. They're just not comparable in location, in traffic count, in everything you want to look at. That sale on Battleground is just not comparable. Sale number four, which is listed as PID 986041898, that is a light industrial sale. It's not even zoned. It's not even zoned commercial. It's a light industrial sale. The last property, that's a sale in Washougal, in Old Town Washougal. And again, I would not compare a land sale in Old Town Washougal to land on McGilvery and 164th, arguably one of the top commercial areas in the county. So if the appellant's going to rely upon those two improved sales and those land sales, they're not comparable and they're not market transactions. I can go through my appraisal report if you would like. It's fairly self-explanatory. There are sales of daycares that substantiate the income approach to value, but I do agree with Wayne. It's an issue of COVID. The assessor did everything we could to gather information to apply an adjustment. We did apply an adjustment, and it can be argued if that's enough. What I would ask of Wayne, and I've asked previously multiple times, is if these properties were affected, I asked for their income information so we could properly evaluate each property. That information was not provided by the appellant, even though it's asked for multiple times. He did not provide it in this evidence here. He provides an article that is compelling. I agree. It's a compelling article. But why isn't he providing us the income information to this property to analyze the effects of COVID in this period of time? And none of that information was provided. And so I have to assume that the information he did provide is the best evidence. And I've just refuted that evidence quite clearly.
All right. Tell us a little bit about how you came up with the income capitalization report. That's the value you use.
Yes. Yeah. Let me grab that as I struggle through my multiple screens here.
One of my concerns is that, I mean, your cap rates on there,
yeah.
you come up with the highest cap rate of 7.32, but you use 7.5, which I understand will give you a lower value.
Yeah.
But I'm asking this question for the future ones too, because I noticed
sure.
some you use 7.5 and others you use 7.75.
Yeah, and it's all an issue of location and the specifics of that property. This property, this daycare, is in an area. It's located directly behind the Fred Meyer on 164th and McGilvery. And if you look at an aerial to the north and to the east, all residential. It's in a premium location, so it warranted a lower cap rate than perhaps other facilities. It's also a little bit newer than some of the other facilities, so it warranted a higher cap rate. And it's been maintained. It's a KinderCare. KinderCares are maintained to a level that is greater than typical daycares. No one is dropping off their child at the KinderCare and worried that the building's going to fall down. I mean, these things are maintained nicely, and so its location warranted that cap rate compared to others. I would point and on, like, for instance, page on my report. I'm scrolling through it here. I apologize. Digital copies are just a nightmare for me. On page 7 of my report, I provided land sales of similar zoning, of similar size, and of similar area that have typical similar traffic counts, clearly supporting that $18 a foot land value. As we scroll down on the, and as Wayne said it, I don't like to rely upon the cost approach on these properties either. So we're relying upon the income capitalization approach. Our rent information on these properties is limited because we ask for the information and we can only use what we receive. So it's very difficult. But we do have three rent comps. That's listed on page 8, where the lowest rent comp was $18.20 a foot, the highest rent comp was $26 a foot, and we use just a hair under $20 a foot on rents for this property. On page 9, the first grid shows cap rates, and, you know, and this can be argued, it's difficult. You know, I'm using some office mixed-use sales because that's all I have to go on. There's one daycare there. The first sale is a daycare. The other ones are office mixed-use because I have nothing else. It's a published cap rate, and they are indicating a range of 6 to a little under 7.5, and we're using 7.5. So I felt comfortable with that 7.5. And then below that is the income income approach that renders the value of 2.5. And then, as you can see, as I spoke to below that, I just a quick statement that we applied a 5% adjustment based upon our COVID survey study. And we had lots of debate on this. How, you know, do we cut values in half? Well, that's not reasonable. Do we cut values 25%? Well, that's huge. So we tried to acknowledge COVID and at the same time maintain the validity of our valuations based upon what's happening in the market. So that is The best I can speak to regarding our COVID adjustment. On our sales comparison approach, there are daycare sales. I've listed three that have occurred within the last 5 years, and they indicate a range of value, and this again is on page 10. They indicate a range of value of $204 to $376 a foot. And, you know, I'm using a value of $220 a foot on the sales comparison approach, which is on the low end of that range, that would indicate that sales comparison value of 2.5. I'm recommending to sustain the 2021 certified value, which is the income approach less 5% due to a COVID adjustment of $2.435 million. And I would be happy to answer, to my best of my ability, any questions you have.
I don't have any questions.
No, I don't either.
No question. I think that's, I mean, I went through, you know, this one probably more diligently than I did the others, because, like you say, they're all similar in the structure of how you valued them.
Yes.
I was just concerned about the 7.5 and, you know, obviously the 5% discount. Is 5% enough? I have no idea. Nor does anybody else.
can I have some rebuttal? And this, I won't go in much rebuttal in the future with other ones, but is that all right?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to have to go to a point where that's what it's going to come down to, because I'm about to show that all of our evidence is not good enough. In other words, let me just explain real quick. Maybe they had it right saying that an appraiser would hesitate to use our sales, but they are absolutely, and non-arm's length is usually between interrelated parties, which these are not. That's like saying it's non-arm's length if it's an REO sale or a bulk sale. Why don't we just make everything a non-arm's length, unless it's perfect? But yes, you hesitate using those sales if you're an appraiser, possibly. You'd have to adjust quite a bit upwards if you did use those sales for that information alone, that it wasn't marketed. But I don't know if it would get to the value per square foot of the subject. But if you look at the problem is, if you look at the appraiser's information, I can just tell you in as brief as I can, hopefully it's the same on the other cases. Let me just go through it briefly, that you'll notice that on their income reports, for example, they say that they've gotten these daycares. One was 2016, one was 2017 out of the three. That's when they were collected, which is before COVID. They only have one in 2019. And that's when it was collected. That doesn't mean that's what the rent was. It could have been signed before that. So two out of three, which are before COVID, one is not enough. If you look at their cap rates, again, they only use one daycare center. And by the way, that one daycare center is the only daycare center, it's the same one, that they only one that they use in their sales comp that's during the time of COVID. Their sales, they only use three. Two out of three are before COVID. One is in, I think, 16, and one is in year 18. The only one they use that's in 19 has 5.84:1 land to building ratio, and they make a big deal out of land. It has far more land and far more land to building ratio than the subject, and that's why it's not even a good enough comp. I would hesitate to use that one for sure, and that's probably why it's sold for 376. So the bottom line is neither of us have enough evidence to support a certain value, but we do have an article. Not only do we have an article explaining how difficult it was, but we have the 5% acknowledgement of COVID that the assessor used. But a 5% discount is like saying like a quarter cap rate, a quarter of a point. So if you thought that without COVID that these generally sell for, let's say, a 7 cap rate, basically what the county's saying is, no, now it's a 7.25 or 7.3. My point is it's more consideration being taken into account, especially for this particular 1/1/21. And then the next year is a totally separate issue. But just take that all into account for all of these cases, and that's all we have.
So can I just one point of a rebuttal, and then this is all I have to say. Is agreed. COVID's a question. And why wasn't the answer key provided to us in the form of financials?
I'll explain. I'm so glad you brought that up. I can explain. These are all owner occupied. We don't have rental income information, and they're not going to supply the personal income. So there is no rental income. That's all.
So the rental income we have to use is the best that we have available.
Which neither of us have good enough evidence.
I provided rental information.
Yeah, but I explained all of yours are before COVID, except one. Whatever. It's up to the board.
I have nothing further.
Okay, any other questions, Lisa or Dick?
I don't have any more. No.
I don't have any more.
Okay, close that hearing.
This is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves case number 161 for property ID 121-833-000. Properties owned by Preedy Knowledge, LLC. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. Greg Peterson is present over video chat as the representative for the assessor's office, and Wayne Tannenbaum is present over the phone as the representative for the appellant. They have both already been sworn in, so I will hand it over to Dan.
Okay, since we've already sworn you in and given you more information, Wayne, give us anything else you want to give us on this one?
Essentially the same. The only slight difference would be I think this is a little bit larger property, which again, a little higher value, a little more risk. And again, we would look at a minimum of at least an 8 to a 9 cap rate based on, that's just based on my experience throughout the years in real estate. But that's honestly just a guesstimate. So that's all we have.
Okay, Greg?
Yeah, I just scrolled through the information. It is essentially the same. One thing I would speak to that hasn't spoken to yet is you know, we're talking about what the buyer expects, and there would be an assumed higher cap rate. Yet, you know, we're not seeing the market flooded with these properties for sale, because a seller expects something as well. And if the properties are not being offered up for sale, clearly there's a thought that we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel here, because in the crash, the financial crash, in the mid 2006, 2007, 2008, we saw the market flood with properties. That was real. Not saying COVID isn't real, but we're not seeing a flood of properties on the market. So we can speak to what the buyers would expect, but we also need to look at what the sellers would expect. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration as well, that we're not seeing these properties hit the market at huge discounts.
Well, I think the difference is, in that case, there was probably an alternative place to put money, where in this situation, there's not many alternatives.
That's what I was thinking.
Maybe gold and silver.
What? You don't? What about Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's right.
We actually were expecting. I mean, I hop onto CoStar every single day, and I check my regions that I reappraise. What's hitting the market? And the commercial market is and now obviously we're sitting here in 2022, but the commercial market in Clark County is like the residential market. It's on fire. There is no inventory.
Yeah.
Because there's the thought and there's the anticipation that Clark County is going to continue to boom. Now, obviously, COVID's slowing some things down, but there's still the feeling. And because if there wasn't the feeling, we would see it in listings, and we're not seeing
it. Yeah, I understand it in the housing market. I don't quite understand it as much in the commercial and industrial market.
I guess it just depends on what they're buying in the commercial market. Are they buying daycares, and are they buying... As you said, theaters probably aren't selling real well right now, I wouldn't think. And
well, not only are they not selling, but they're not being offered for sale.
Right.
One can't buy what isn't for sale.
But we're
not seeing them for sale.
Maybe they're just hoping to survive.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, just to confirm, Wayne, you're asking for $1,491,668 on this one?
We are, but now I'd like a quick rebuttal then to say that, again, it's up to the board to think about that too, saying that, yeah, I don't think sellers can get what they want, exactly. So wouldn't that possibly mean that they think the market value might be lower and they're just holding on to it till it turns around, which, by the way,
yeah.
One thing I can say on is that the market is getting better these days, and I do agree that throughout the nation, one property type, I shouldn't say this, has stayed about the same, maybe better, is industrial. I shouldn't even say that. But anyway, that's all.
Yeah, okay. There's a couple reasons not to sell.
Any other questions, comments?
I don't have any questions or comments.
Close that hearing.
This is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves case number 160 for property ID 114728982. The property is owned by TNB LLC. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. Greg Peterson is on video chat for the assessor's office, and Wayne Tannenbaum is present over the phone as the representative for the appellant. And then they've both already been sworn in, so I'll hand it to Dan for the rest.
Yeah, you've both been sworn in and given information, so Wayne, tell us about this one.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you repeat the parcel number again? Sorry.
11-4728-982.
Okay. Well, I don't know if there's anything different, but I would like to say, when I look at this, let me just make sure there's nothing different on this one. I think most of the information that we relied upon in our prior hearings is going to be exactly the same here, so I think we will go ahead and rely on the prior information, evidence, the same article we have, et cetera, except I would like to say something different. So just so it's on the record, you know, the reason I keep saying just leave it up to the board is almost because I don't know what to say anymore different. I say the same thing to different boards in the nation, and we either get no changes, slight reductions, or large reductions on the same argument. So, again, yes, for example, one thing I can say is just from your experience, and I used to work for buyers, too, of commercial properties, to me, there'd be no way they'd only take a quarter point cap rate. So you say, well, what is it? Well, the board has experience in commercial real estate. There could be an assumption that at least a point more than the prior year would make sense. So maybe an 8 cap rate instead of 7 or 8.5 instead of 7.5. So I'm just going to, again, leave it up to the board because I've seen so many different decisions. It's hard to know, but it's really up to you. That's all we have.
In scrolling through the evidence, I would agree it's the same. So there's no additional arguments to be made. Same sales. And I've spoken to that probably ad nauseum. So unless you have questions regarding the information I submitted, I'll rely upon previously submitted testimony.
And this one you use 7.5 again and a 5% adjustment.
Yep.
Rent rate of 155, so same as the last one. Okay, I have no further questions on this one.
I don't have any further. Nope.
And you're asking, just to confirm, you're, Wayne, you're asking for 627, is that correct? 627-448?
That's correct.
Hey, close that hearing.
This is a continuation of the February 1st, 2022 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves case number 165 for property ID 186-579-005. The property is owned by Vancom One LLC. Board members present by video conference are Lisa Bodner, Dick Riley, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. Greg Peterson is present over the phone over video chat for the assessor's office, and Wayne Tannenbaum is present over the phone for the appellant. So they have both been sworn in. We'll go ahead and pass it over to Dan.
Which one are we doing again?
It's Vancom 1. It's property ID 186-579-005.
It shows the Peninsula Group, KinderCare.
This is the one up in Salmon Creek.
Yes. Okay. So we've been sworn in and ready to go on this one. Wayne, do you have anything additional to add to this one?
Nothing else as far as the fair comments and rebuttal the same as they were in the previous cases. And the fact that our requested value is $1,433,184, but we understand where the appraiser is coming from regarding whatever he's going to say about our requested value. that's all.
Okay. Anything else you want to say, Greg?
No further comments. I'm just in a brief review.
That's the last one for Craig, then, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Well, tell your wife we miss seeing her.
Okay.
Yeah, I will. I'll relay the message.
All right. We'll close that hearing.
All right.